Today's shiur is daf tzadik vav. We will begin on daf tzadik hey amud beis in the middle of the amud amarava. In way of introduction to today's shiur, we've learned many times that a kli cheres, an earthenware utensil that becomes tamei, cannot be purified by just putting it into a mikveh. The only way such a keli can become tahar is by breaking them. Shvirason zu tarason. Breaking it is what makes it tahar. Also, so today's shiur will discuss what is considered broken. When is a keli considered broken, that if it was tameh, it's no longer tameh? Another word of introduction. Even when we have a broken earthenware, it does not, and it's broken, it can still have some use. It can be used as a gistera. The definition of a gistera is a shard, that a broken piece of an earthenware utensil can be used as a shard whenever you need a piece of earthenware to cover something, to put something on. All those situations can be considered, can still give this broken utensil some use. Begins the Gemara. Amar Rava, Chamesh Midas Pekli Cheres. There are five measures regarding broken klicheres. Nikev k'moitzi mashka. If it has the hole size large enough to let out liquid, it means it has a leak. Tar mil tamei gistra. It's no longer tamei to have the tumah of a shard. And as the Gemara explains on the Sadik Vav Amin Aleph, since we're dealing with a shard in the first place, which is really insignificant, now, as soon as the shard gets any size hole, people will no longer keep it. And as the Gemara says, "Ein oimrim hevei gistra legistra," people do not patch up a patch, so it becomes totally useless. It's considered certainly broken and will not have any tumah. However, v'dayin keli hu l'kadosh by mechatas. The halacha is that if somebody becomes tumas mes, he has to be sprinkled with the mechatas, which is a combination of the ashes of the parah aduma with mayim chayim, with spring water. In order for this to be effective, this mixture has to be placed in a keli. Rava is teaching us that even though the keli has a hole, it has a leak, since it's such a small leak, it's still considered a keli that is usable for the zrika of the mechatas on the person who is tummy with a tumas mes. Nikev kekainis mashka. Now it has a hole that is big enough that allow liquid to seep in. Tam l'katz by mechatas. Now it's no longer usable for the mechatas, since it has such a large hole, it's no longer considered a keli for that halacha. V'dayin keli hu l'hachsh b'sroim, but it's still considered a keli as far as susceptibility of tumas oichlam. And we review what we learned yesterday. Yesterday we said that any food to be susceptible to tumah has to be mukhshal kabel tumah, has to become wet to mekabel tumah. And as we explained, every food essentially becomes wet as it grows through rain or through watering. So we said that the Torah says that as long as it's connected to the ground, it's not yet able to become mukhshal kabel tumah. Teaches us the Gemara that if food is in a flower pot that has a hole, but the hole is so small, it's only small enough for water to seep in, that is not considered a large enough hole to consider the items in that flower pot still connected to the ground, and therefore that food will still be susceptible to Kabbalah's Tumah. Tosfos makes a point that the keli we're talking about here is a keli that isn't designated specifically for using for liquids. But if it's a keli which is specifically designated for using for liquid, as soon as it has a hole through which liquids could seep in, it's considered broken and it's not tamei under any circumstances. Nikiv kisharish cotton, if it has a hole the size of a small root, now tamei l'hafshe bazroim, it's already considered such a large hole that the food, that the seeds in that flower pack with a hole the size of a root are considered connected to the ground, and therefore, even if they become wet, they will not be mukshel kabbalas tumah. They will not be considered prepared for kabbalas tumah. However, v'dayin hu l'kal b'zeisim, since it's still large enough to contain well olives, so it's still considered a utensil, and it's therefore still considered susceptible to tumah, and it's not considered broken. However, nikev k'motzi zeisim, once it has a hole large enough that olives could fall out from it, then tamel kabbalas zeisim, it's tar from any tumah. And the way most Rishonim learn that, since most utensils, once they have the hole the size of an olive, are not used, it's a very large hole, they are no longer mekabel tumah. However, v'dayin hu l'kal by reminim, it's still considered a keli as far as being able to contain pomegranates. That is, that if somebody wants to use this keli to hold pomegranates, so even though it has holes the size of an olive, still, since it's usable to hold pomegranates, so it's still considered a keli, and it's mekabel tumah. Other Rishonim explain that once it has the hole the size of an olive, the reason it's not mekabel tumah is because, since we find throughout the whole Torah that the shear of many things is a kezias, that's what we find as far as achila is a kezias, everything is a kezias, so too here the shear of a broken keli is an olive like it is everywhere else. Nikiv k'motzi reimim, but now if it has a hole large enough that pomegranates will fall out, tar miklum, it's totally tar. And even the Rishonim and Achronim explain, if the owner of this utensil would now use it or designate it to be used for an item larger than pomegranates, his designation will not make it into utensil. Since it has such large holes, it's no longer considered utensil. There is a shail in Dachroinim, at what point does this designation have to be taking place? That means, we said that if it has a hole the size of an olive, if you use it for pomegranates, it's still considered a utensil. When did you decide to use it for pomegranates? Was it only because you decided to use it for pomegranates before it got the size, the hole of an olive size? So therefore, for you, it's not a broken keli because you use this for pomegranates. But let's say you normally use it for smaller items, like olives, and it got a hole the size of an olive. Then, instead of throwing it out, you say, you know what? I'll use it for pomegranates. Do we say that designation came after the breaking and it's no longer tamei? Do we say that designation shows that that is still for you a keli and it never was considered broken? Another word of hagdama, of introduction, before we go further. Kli cheres have another unique halacha as far as susceptibility of tumah. Normally, a utensil becomes tamei by touching it. If a tamei person touches it, or if it's in the oil hames, it's in the same house as a mess, it becomes tamei. Kli cheres become tamei me'aviron, from the inside. The tumah has to penetrate the inside of the utensil. However, that's a kula, but it also has a chumrah. It doesn't actually have to touch the walls from the inside. Once the tumah came inside the keli, that keli is susceptible to tumah. The Torah tells us that if we want to avoid a kli cheres from becoming tameh by being in the same house as a mess, and that's something certainly we want to do, because as we learned from the beginning of today's shiur, you can't take the kli cheres to the mikvah. So if it becomes tameh, you have to break it. There is a piece of advice the Torah gives us. Put on it tzomet pasul. Put on it a seal. By putting on it a sealed cover, it prevents the tumah from penetrating, and the tumah will not go into the keli. Says the Gemara, from hukaf tzomet pasul, if this utensil has a sealed cover around it, it's considered a utensil at shiif chasrubay, until the majority of the utensil is broken off. And interesting, the Mashah asks, now we really have Rava saying a sixth situation of Kalim, because we mentioned five types of hole, and now we have Yifchas Ruban. So why did Rava say that I spoke about five things? He should have said I spoke about six things. So Mashah says, Rava says that I'm talking about Kalim, about utensils. And this situation is Yifchas Rubai. The majority is broken. And if the majority is broken, it's no longer a keli. It's no longer a utensil. So it doesn't fall into what Rava was speaking about, because Rava was speaking about kelim. This is not a keli. Amar Ravasi. So Ravasi says, Shemati klicheres shiuri kamatzu Ruben. I heard regarding an earthenware, the measure to consider broken is when it has the hole the size of an olive grain. Amalei Rava. So Rava said, Shemel said to him, Shemeloi Shemata Elva Mukav Tzom Pasol. Maybe you know where you heard it, regarding the situation where you want to have a covered seal, and that the covered seal should not work. If it has the hole the size of a pomegranate, it won't work. But as far as normal situation, as soon as it has the hole the size of an olive, it's already considered broken. Ask the Gemara, how could have Rava given this teretz to Rav Asi to reconcile what he's saying with Rav Asi said? For Rava Hudama, Rava is the one that just told us, Summit Pasul, that the covered seal works at Shifchas Rubai until the majority of the utensils broken off, not the size of a pomegranate. Says the Gemara, like Kasha. That's not a difficulty. Haber Ravavi, and there's Machloikus Rashi and Taisus how to learn this teretz. First we'll learn Rashi, and then we'll explain what Taisha says. The first statement that Rava made, that a sealed cover is effective as long as the majority is not broken, is speaking regarding large earthenware utensils. Habazutri, the second statement, that a pomegranate size hole makes it lose its effectiveness, it's talking about small earthenware utensils. Tosfos have a problem with Rashi, because Tosfos says what's considered big and what's considered a big keli and what's considered a small keli, that I should know that by a big keli the shear is rubai and by small keli the shear is pomegranates. Therefore Tosfos learns just the opposite. He says we always follow whichever is smaller, and let me explain what I mean. If you have a hole, if the hole is the majority of the utensil, even though that hole is less than a rimon, we would say that somit pasul, a covered seal, won't work. If on the other hand you have a hole which is as big as a pomegranate, even though that hole is not the majority, it's already somit pasul will not work. So Tosfos is effectively learning just the opposite. In a small utensil, the sealed cover loses its effectiveness once the majority of the utensil has been lost, even though the hole is less than the size of a pomegranate. In a large utensil, once it has the size of a pomegranate, then even though it's not the majority, it will also lose its effectiveness. Now, what forced Tosfos into this pshat? Because he didn't know to say what Rashi will say small means and what large means. So the Sfas Emes and the Mashah explain Rashi to be saying that small as any utensil in which a pomegranate-sized hole represents more than half its structure, and large is one in which such a hole constitutes half or less of its structure. Amar Vasi, so Vasi says, Shoinim, we learnt in a brisa, Kli Cheres, an earthenware vessel, Shi'ur Kikainis Mashka, the shear is as soon as it has a hole large enough to take in liquid. For Le'amra Moitzel Mashka, they only said that a hole which is so small that it leaks is already considered a hole. This is the first din that we learned today. Elin in Gistrabavad was only said regarding a shard. That by shard, as soon as it has a hole the size that it leaks out liquid, it's already considered broken. My Tama, why by a shard do we say that such a small hole already makes it considered broken? Omazut Bereder of Nachman, Lefishein Oimrim, Havei Gistra Legistra. People do not say bring a shard for a shard. Once a shard has any hole in it, even though it's such a small hole, it's only small enough for liquid to leak out, they throw it out. They're not going to bring a patch for a patch. Oma Ula, says the Gemara, Pliga by Trey Merov and Merova. There was Machlokas and Meroim and Etzisrael. Who were they? Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Oven, Rabbi Yossi, Bezavta. Charam Maitzirim once said that the measure large enough, says Rashi, that the Gemara is speaking here for Hechshez Roim, and we'll explain again what we mean. As we explained yesterday and today, if seeds are in a flower pot and the flower pot does not have any hole, then and those seeds become wet, they become mukshul kabbal tumah, they become ready to be susceptible to kabbalas tumah. Now the question is, if it has a hole, how big does the hole have to be? So the Gemara, according to Rashi, is saying a machloikis. One man d'amit says that it has to be the size large enough for pomegranate to pass through. The charam akisharish cotton, the hole has to be the size of a small root. The simonach and yisimin to remember this machloikis is echra marba vechra mamet. We have many times the halacha echra marba vechra mamet uvat shichav and libel shmaim. It doesn't make a difference if you do a lot or a little, as long as you have the right intention. Here too, that's the way to remember. What is pshat? So Rashi says, if we think about it, there could have been three possibilities. There could have been the size of a pomegranate, which is the largest size. There could have been the size of an olive, which is less than a pomegranate. And there could have been the size of a sharish cotton, a small root, which is even less than an olive. Nobody said, says Rashi, that the hole is the size of an olive. One said a very big size, the largest possibility, a pomegranate. One said the smallest possibility, which is a root. Rashi says nobody would have said that the hole has to be the size of a leek to let in or out water. That wouldn't have anything to do. That certainly is too small of a hole. So we have two diametrically opposed shittas, the largest an olive, the smallest a root, but nothing in the middle. Nobody said the olive, which is in the middle. Tosfos disagrees with Rashi's pshat, and he says that there's a Mishnah, Masechta Uksin, that says that the hole for a flower pot to be considered connected to the ground is a small root, and therefore Tosfos says, how can we have here a machloikis, a maroyim, what the hole for Hechshez Roim is, when there's a Mishnah that says specifically that the hole is the size of a small root. Therefore Tosfos says that what this machloikis Amaroyim is referring to the, again back to Tzomet Pasul, when will a sealed cover work and when won't it work. The Ramban, in defense of Rashi, says a very nice pshat, and it's a chazara for the Gemara we learned yesterday. We explained that we learned in the Mishnah that Rav Shimon does not differentiate between a flower pot that has a hole or doesn't have a hole. As far as Sichel Shabbos, he says it's never considered connected to the ground. Yet, said the Gemara, there is one situation where Rav Shimon will agree that a flower pot with a hole does make a difference in halacha. When is that? So we explained as far as Hechshez Roim, that if it has a hole, then it's considered connected to the ground. That means even though Rav Shimon normally holds that a hole doesn't make a difference, for Hechshez Roim, it does make a difference. Says the Ramban, that's what Rashi's saying. The Mishnah, Masechet Oksan, is going according to Rabbanan. They always make a difference between a flower pot with a hole and that. And they say that a flower pot with a hole the size of a root is considered connected to the ground and it's not susceptible to tumah. Those seeds. But Rav Shimon, that's telling us that normally a flower pot with a hole is still not considered connected to the ground, says now the Gemara, what's Rav Shimon's shear going to be when he does hold that Hechshu's Roim is an exception to the rule? Of that the Gemara says, there's a Machloikis Amaroim. Some say that he holds it's the same like the Rabbanon, the size of a small root. And the other Amaroim says, no, he will require a larger hole for it to be considered connected to the ground, the size of a pomegranate. Amar Rav Chinana Bakahana Mishmeid Rebbe Leza. Klicheres, an earthenware vessel, shiuri kemaitzazim. The shear that's considered broken is when owls pass through. Amak sheishabrei the rav masayim b'mishmeid Rebbe Lezer, v'reik glolim. They have the same status as utensils made out of dung, clay avonim, utensils made out of stone, clay adama, clay utensils, shema kavim tuma, which are not susceptible to tuma. Loim b'divrei Torah, not midaraisa, v'loim b'divrei sofer, not midrabbanan. Olinian Tzomet Pasol, having regard to a sealed cover, at Shif Chesrubai, until the majority of utensil has been broken off, the sealed cover will work. Haron Lachamatznia, Haron Lachamatznia, Haron Lachamatznia. Begins the Mishnah. Hazorik Meshus HaYochad Lushas Rabim, if somebody throws an object from Meshus HaYochad to Lushas Rabim, or Meshus Ram Lushas HaYochad, Chayev. He's Chayev, a Malacha of Haitzah, of Zrika. Mishus HaYochad, Rishus HaYochad. If somebody throws an object from one Rishus HaYochad to another Rishus HaYochad, Rishus Ram Bamsa. In other words, let's view two houses on a street, and assuming that the street is Rishus Rabim, and somebody throws an item from one house across the street to the other house, Rabbi Kiva Machayev, Rabbi Kiva says that he's Chayev, Becham and Poitrim, where the Chom exempt him. Ketzat, how is this so? And Tosfos takes out the word Ketzat. Because now what the Gemara is really going to begin, what the Mishnah is really going to begin discussing is the Malacha of Moshit. Moshit means really passing, handing over an object. And the Mishnah is going to be teaching us that there is a situation of carrying, of handing over from one Rishus HaYochad to another Rishus HaYochad with a Rishus Rabim in the middle, and you will be Chayif. Because to understand this, we have to understand and analyze how the Mishkan was disassembled. As we know, the Mishkan was assembled and disassembled throughout Klal Yisrael's travel in the Midbar. And as we've also explained many times, the Mishkan and the building and the assembling and the disassembling of the Mishkan is the source for all Melechus Shabbos. So let's understand how it looked. That's the way most Rishonim explain when they disassembled the Mishkan. They disassembled the Mishkan, the Levim disassembled it, and they had to crush them, the boards, which were transported on wagons. The wagons themselves were Rishus HaYochad, because they had the dimensions of Rishus HaYochad, 10 by 4. Now the wagons were lined up, one wagon in front of another wagon, not side by side, but one in front of another. And the Levim would disassemble the Mishkan, take it onto one wagon, and the people on one wagon would pass it over to the people, to the Levim and the wagon in front of them. Now there was a space between the two wagons, which are one in front of another. That space is Rishus HaRabim. And the Mishnah is teaching us, as we will learn in a moment, that since Moshit in the Mishkan was from one Rishus HaYochad to another Rishus HaYochad in front of it, but not from one Rishus HaYochad to another Rishus HaYochad alongside of it, Moshit and is only applicable when the Rishus HaYochad to the other Rishus HaYochad with the Rishus Rabim in between is one in front of another, not alongside of each other. The obvious question is, isn't it similar enough to say they're both on Moshit? And the answer is, as we will say many times, and as we have said, that since Haitzah is a Malacha Geruah, the entire Malacha of carrying is a difficult Malacha to understand, we limit its application. So says the Mishnah, Shnei Gzuz Straw Zuk Neged Zub Rishus Rabim. If you have two balconies, one opposite the other in Rishus Rabim, that means you have two balconies of two sides, you have two houses on two sides of the street with balconies in front of them, and Rishus Rabim in between, both Hamoshit, if somebody passes from one house to the other, or Vazarik Mezulazu, or he throws from to the other potter. Hoyishtem Dijutachas. However, if both of them are on the same side, that means you have two houses, one next door to each other with balconies protruding, and there's just rabbin between those two balconies, Hamoshit Chayiv. Somebody passes from one balcony to the other, will be Chayiv. Vazarik, but if he throws, be potter. Why? Shekein Hoysa Avodah Salvim. That's the way it worked when the Levim were loading the boards onto the wagon. Shteya goes zu achazu b'shus rabim. There were two wagons, one behind the other in the shus rabim, and mashitna krosh mizul zu, and they would hand over the boards one to the other. Avaloi zarkim, they would not throw them. Rashi says, why wouldn't they throw them? V'pnei koivdom, because they were heavy. Other Mefarshim quote the Yerushalmi, and someone even changed the Girs and Rashi, not Mnei Koivdom, but because Mnei Kvoidom, because it's not respectful to take the Kroshim of the Mishkan and throw them. These are the Mishkan's Kroshim, they should be treated with respect. There's an interesting Machloikas Rishonim in the Melacha of Moshit. Tosfos and other Rishonim say that had it Hashat to work, that the Levi standing in one wagon would take the entire keresh, the entire board, pick it up from the wagon he's standing on, and place it onto the wagon in front of him. So he did both Dakira and Hanocha, as we've explained many times, to be chayiv for Haitzah, or any of its toldos, the person has to both do Akira and Hanocha. The Meiri, however, quotes to Yerushalmi that the Melacha of Hashata was unique. It was done by two people. One Levi on one wagon picked it up, and the Levi in the wagon in front of him accepted it. And even though we know normally to be chayiv for Melacha Saitzah, the person has to both do the Akir V'Anocha, and furthermore, as we learned, Shnaim Shesua, if two people do a malacha together, that's not considered a malacha. Says the Meiri that Hashata was unique, because since we're learning the entire malacha of Moshit from the way it was done in the Mishkan, and the way it was done in the Mishkan was done with two people, therefore it's considered a malacha, even though one person does the Akira and another person does the Anocha. But this will certainly be the exception, that this is the only time where different people are two people are doing the malacha, one the akira and one the anocha, that you chayiv. Normally, as we learned, to be chayiv, one person has to do the entire malacha. Says the Gemara, Michti. Let's analyze this. Zrika tolda da hetzahi. Zrika is a tolda of carrying. Hetzah gufa heichik siva. But where in the Torah is taking, where is Haitzah mentioned? So Tosfos right away says, none of the Malachas are mentioned explicitly in the Torah. Why do you need that this Malacha should be mentioned explicitly in the Torah, that we're looking for a Pasuk? Usually the fact that this was a Malacha that was done in the Mishkan turns it into a Malacha. So Tosfos says, like we said, since Haitzah is a Malacha Geruah, and we can't just use the fact that it was done in the Mishkan to make it into Malacha, so therefore we need to find a Pasuk that says that it's a Malacha. Ask the Achroin, the Pnei Yeshua. Ask. We're up to Daf Tzadik Vav in Masechta Shabbos. We mentioned Haitzah on the first plat of the Masechta. We mentioned Haitzah in Paraklal Gadol in the Mishnah that lists all the Malachas. Why did the Gemara wait till Daf Tzadik Vav to ask, where do we know that Haitzah is a Malacha? Furthermore, if the Gemara's question is that how do I know Haitzah, where is the Pasuk that teaches us Haitzah as a Melacha, so why did the Gemara have to give words of introduction of Zrika told the Haitzahi, that Zrika is a told of Haitzah? The Gemara should have gotten to the question, Haitzah, Hechik Siva, where do we know Haitzah as a Melacha? Says the Pnei Yeshua that Haitzah as a Melacha we know because the Pasuk says, Ayetze Ish Mekayme B'yayim Ashri. However, now we're talking about Zrika. We're talking about throwing. And as we just said, since Haitzah is a Melacha Gerua, we can't learn Zrika from Haitzah. I have to have an independent Pasuk for Zrika. So now the Gemara is asking, Zrika, where do I know? Even though I've already established previously that Haitzah is a Melacha, but how will I know that Zrika is a Melacha? And that's what the Gemara is looking for. Says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Kra, Yitzav Moshe, Ve'viru Kol Mamochna. Moshe gave out a command, they said a proclamation, that El Yetzi Ishram Kaim B'yayim Mashvi, that Ayasa Oid Melacha, Ish V'isha, Ayasa Oid Melacha, people should no longer do Melacha, L'Trumas HaKadosh, for contribution for the Kadosh, V'yikolai Om Mehavi, and the people stop bringing. And as the Pnei Yeshua continues to explain, this pasuk I don't need to teach me the basic din of Haitzah, because the basic din of Haitzah I learned from the pasuk of Ayetzi Ishmim Koyme B'yayim Ashvi. So I use this pasuk to teach us the din of Zrika. Explains the Gemara. Moshe Heichen Havi Yosef. Where did Moshe live? B'machne Leviya. In the Machne Leviya. Or Machne Leviya was Shusha Rabim Havai. And the Machne Leviya was Shusha Rabim. How do I know it was a public domain? Because that's where all the people came to meet Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Masham at the Mishkanus Yaakov prove from this Gemara something that's very relevant l'aloch l'maisim. In defining a Rishus Rabbim, we said it has to be a certain width, Tezayin Amma, and other qualifications. But there's a very big Machloikus Rishonim that some Rishonim say that on top of all the other requirements, to be considered a Rishus Rabbim, it has to be a place where 600,000 people walk every day. And other Rishonim say, where do we know this from? Says the Mishkanus Yaakov, says the Masham, this is the Gemara. Let's understand. The Machne Leviya, in terms of its own characteristics, the roads in the Machne Leviya did not look different than the roads in any other place in where Klai Yisrael in the Midbar. If anything, they were less, because there were less Leviyim than the other Shvatim. So why is the Gemara saying that only the Machne Leviya was a Rishus Rabbim? Because the Machne Leviya was the place that everybody came to, because that's where Moshe Rabbeinu was. So you had 600,000 people walking there. From there we see that it's not to be considered a Rishus Rabbim, it has to be a place where there's 600,000 people going. Interestingly, Rav Moshe in the Tshuva takes this a step further. He said, it's not just enough that 600,000 people should live in a place. He says, let's say you'll have a street in a city. And in that city there are 600,000 people. But on the average street, on the average road, not all 600,000 people travel. He says, to be considered a Rishus Rabbim, you have to have 600,000 people, and 600,000 people traveling on specific roads. Now, says the Gemara, Moshe Rabbeinu was in the Machne Leviya, which is the Rishus Rabbim. The Kohamalu Yisrael, he's telling Klal Yisrael, Lo kafiku v'taisim Rishus Yochid d'tchu, don't leave your Rishus Yochid, Rishus Rabbim, to the Rishus Rabbim, on Shabbos carrying. Ask the Maramaydu Shabbos Koy, how do we know that this proclamation was made Shabbos? Dimam Echol Koy, maybe it was taking place on the weekday, or Meshum d'shlimu l'melacha, and what he meant was, they already brought enough. There was enough contribution. Says the Gemara, Gomar Havar Avar from Yom Kippurim. I learned Xer Shav the word Havar Avar from Yom Kippurim. Ksiv Hochve Yaviru Kovimachna. It says here that they made an announcement. Ksiv Hosso Bavata Shoifer Trua. On Yom Kippur, on the year of Yovel, it says Bavata Shoifer Trua, they should blow a Shoifer. Malahal B'yoy Masa. Just as that Pasuk is talking about a day that you're not allowed to do Melacha, Yom Kippur, Afkan B'yoy Masa, here too it's talking about a day you're not allowed to do Melacha, which is Shabbos. says the Chasam Sofer, if the point of the pasuk is to teach us that carrying is asur on Shabbos, so he should have made an announcement. You're not allowed to carry in Shabbos. Why did it have to be said in terms of that v'amalacha yisadayim, there was enough contribution, and therefore don't bring? So says the Chasam Sofer like this. He says, what was done? Klal Yisrael brought v'amalacha yisadayim v'hayisa. They had leftover contributions. What did they do with the leftover contributions? Quotes the Chasam Sofer a medrash that they built with it, a base medrash. They built it a yeshiva. Moshe Rabbein said like this. Everybody knows that building the Mishkan is not Doicha Shabbos. You're not allowed to be Mechal Shabbos to build a Mishkan. But Klal Yisrael might have thought to build a yeshiva, to build a place where people are learning Torah, you're allowed to be Doicha Shabbos, you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos, you're allowed to carry. So Moshe Rabbeinu made an announcement. I know you're bringing extra contributions, and those contributions are going to be used to build a yeshiva. Still, you're now out of carrying Shabbos, because nothing, it's not Doicha Shabbos. Ask the Gemara, ask the Chanetzah. Now we found a source for carrying. From the Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaRabim. Hachnosu minolon. From where do we know you're now allowed to bring in? That you're now allowed to carry from the Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaYochid. And again, since Tosfos explains, we're dealing with a Malacha Gerua, we can never learn one from the other. So just because I saw the Malacha, we need a new Limud for Achnasa. Answers the Gemara, Svaruhu. I could learn it with logical. Michti, Rishus or Rishushu. We're going from one Rishus to another Rishus. Malia Fuki, Malia Yuli. It makes no. What's the difference between carrying from the Rishus HaYochid to the Rishus HaRabim, or from the Rishus HaRabim to the Rishus HaYochid? And again, the way Tosfos explains, what the Svarah tells us is that the pasuk that teaches us Haitzah doesn't differentiate which direction I'm carrying. However, still, even though they're identical, Haitzah is the Av, Achnasa is the Toldo. Michti. Ask the Gemara, Ahamachayiv, Ahamachayiv. We're chayiv both for the Haitzah, and we're chayiv both for Hachnasa. So my karlei high Av, my karlei high Toldo. What's the difference by calling one an Av and one a Toldo? And remember, Tosfos says in Perikla Godel, even though the Mishnah mentions both Haitzah and Hachnasa when it lists all the others, Hachnasa is only a Toldo, and the reason the Mishnah mentioned it is because it's a Malacha Geruah, so this is the Toldo that has to be mentioned, even though normally Toldos are not mentioned. Answer the Mar, Nafkamina, the reason we have to know what's an Av and what's a Toldo is the Avich Shtei Avis Pahadei Adodi. When somebody performs two Avis, Inami Shtei Toldos Pahadei Adodi, we did two Toldos. Mechayiv Tarti, he'll be Chayiv for both. However, the Ovid Av Toldo today, if somebody did the Av in its own Toldo, Lemechayiv Alachad, he'll only be Chayiv one Chattis, you're not Mechayiv for the Toldo when you did the Av also. Ask the Gemara of Elezer, the Mechayiv HaToldo Mokam Av, according to Rebbe Elezer that says that you are Chayiv if you did a Toldo and it's Av at the same time. So back to the question, am I Karolei Av, am I Karolei Toldo, what's an Av and what's a Toldo? Answers the Gemara, the difference is only a difference in terminology, according to Rebbe Elezer. Hach the Havoi B'Mishkin Chshivi, and any act that was significant in the Mishkan, Karolei Av. Hach to loy have a Mishkan Chshivi, this that was not significant in the Mishkan, Karolei Av. So according to Rashi, this explains Tosfos, you could have something that happened in the Mishkan, but if it wasn't significant in the Mishkan, it won't be called a Av, it will only be called a Toldo. Tosfos has another girsa that says that whatever was in the Mishkan is an Av, whatever wasn't in the Mishkan is a Toldo, it has nothing to do with the significance. Inami, and as Tosfos explains this teretz, hach tiksiv, anything that says explicitly regarding melech tzitzah kari Av, v'hach deloy ksivi, anything that's not written in the Torah, For example, Achnasa, it's not written explicitly in the Torah, so it's Kari Tolda, it's called a Tolda, because by carrying, given that it's a Malacha Geruah, we have to have different standards. It has to be written in the Torah. So Haitzah, which is explicitly written in the Torah, is an Av. Hachnasa, which through logic we said is equivalent to Haitzah, is considered a Tolda, but since it's not written in the Torah, it's only a Tolda. Ask the Gemara, Varatnan, this that we learned in a Mishnah. Hazarik Abba Amos, because so somebody throws a sticky object for 4 Amos and hits a wall, if it's Lamal Mishar Tfachim, if it strikes the wall above 10 Tfachim, Kazarik Ba'avir, it's as if he threw it in the air. Mat Mishar Tfachim, it's below 10 Tfachim, Kazarik Ba'arat, it's like he threw it on the ground. Hazarik Ba'abba, and it'll be Chayiv, because Rishus HaRabim goes up to 10 Tfachim. Hazarik Ba'arat Abba Amos, if somebody throws an object that lands on the ground 4 amos away from where he started, chayiv, he's chayiv. Zayik abba amos mishus rabim nolan mechayiv. How do we know that somebody throws 4 amos mishus rabim is chayiv? Amr Rabbi Yishia, she can't argue yirios. The people who weave the curtains, zark and machtem zel zeh, they threw the needle to each other. Ask the Gemara, arge machtem lameli. Weavers need needles. Weavers use a loom for their work. They don't use needles. Else she can't tie for yirios. The people that sew the curtains, Zark and Machtem Zelazer, would throw their needle. The people who embroidered the curtains need the needles. Ask the Gemara of Dimla Gabah Dodi Aviyasvi. Maybe they sat next to each other and it wasn't 4 amos away. Says the Gemara, they couldn't sit next to each other. Moto Hadodim Machtem. They would prick each other with their needles if they were so close. Says the Gemara, okay, they weren't that close of a dilma b'toich arba amos haviyasvi. Maybe they sat within 4 amos. So how do we yet have a proof for arba amos? Elam Rav Chizda, she can't argue yirios. The people who wove the curtains, zork and bruch yiria, they would throw a shuttle, they would take such a stick and they throw it across the width of the curtain. Ask the Gemara, v'loy agda b'yadai. But he had that stick in his hand. To be considered haitzah, to be considered any time carrying, it has to leave your hand. Says the Gemara, Benischa Basra. We're talking with the last piece of thread that at that point he lets go because he doesn't have any more thread. Frektum Aval Markum Petorka Azla. In any case, it travels between 2 panels of threads, which is an exempt area because the loom, although it was situated in the Shutz Rabim, the area traveled between the loom, the 2 threads, did not have the measurements of Rishus HaYachid. So that won't work. Says the Gemara, she can argue re-zoykin b'churim l'shalayim. The people who would weave the curtains would throw their spear needles to somebody else who was borrowing it from them who needed a needle. Ask the Gemara, maybe it was sitting close to each other, not 4 amos away. Says the Gemara, they couldn't be sitting that close. They would again prick each other when they were pulling the threads if they were so close. Says the Gemara, maybe they sat in a staggered fashion. They sat next to each other, but not right, one alongside, one a little in front, and one a little in the back. So within Dalet Amos, but they wouldn't bump into each other because they had that staggered space. Or Taisha says the Gemara could have asked, maybe they didn't sit next to each other, but they didn't sit Dalet Amos away. Vesu furthermore asked them, Mishil Mehadadi, did they borrow tools from each other? Vatanya Luda, ish Melachta Shema Oisim, Melachta Oisim, he did his own work. Venos Melachas Chaveri, would not take from his fellow. There was no need to borrow. Vesu. Furthermore, Mava Arba Amos Mishus Rabim Nolan Mechayiv. All this would help us for throwing. What about, we know that it's us to carry Dalet Amos Mishus Rabim. El Kol Arba, says the Gemara, Kol Arba Amos Mishus Rabim, the din of Dalet Amos Mishus Rabim, Gemara Gemir Eloi, is Halacha L'Moshe Mesinai. So the Baal Amar explains, what is the Halacha L'Moshe Mesinai? So he explains that since the Halacha is that every person, a Pi Halacha, is considered to have Dalet Amos from where he is, so the halacha is teaching us that outside of your Dalet Amos is considered a new rishus, and if you carry past your Dalet Amos, it's considered like you carried from one rishus to another rishus. The difficulty of this is that if this is halacha, the Rechroinim ask that where you are, you have Dalet Amos, so then you should be allowed to carry from, let's say you're standing in the middle, from east to west, 8 Amos, because you're in the middle, and all Dalet Amos around you are considered your Rishus, and of course that is awesome. So there's an interesting psak from Yehuda Asad in the Shas Chuvas Yehuda Yala. He asks the question, the halacha is that if Rosh Hashanah or Sukkot are on Shabbos, we don't blow the shofar, we don't take the lulav. And the Gemara says, Shema Yavarenu Dalet Amos Rishus Rabban, because Chazal were concerned you may carry it Dalet Amos Rishus Rabban. Ask Taisus, why are we worried about carrying a Dalet Amos Rishus Rabban? We should be concerned that you'll take it out from the Shus HaYochid to the Rishus HaRabim when you're carrying it to Shul. Says Rabbi Yehuda Asid, that even though we explained earlier that to be considered a Rishus HaYochid for carrying from Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaRabim, the Rishus HaRabim has to be a place where there are 600,000 people every day, because as we explained in today's Gemara, the Mekor is Haitzah from Machne Levia, which was a place where they had 600,000 people. As far as Dalet Amos Rishus HaRabim is concerned, says Rabbi Yehuda Asad, there is no requirement for 600,000 people. Why? Because we're not learning it from the Mishkan. We're not learning it from what happened in the Midbar. Well, it's a Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai. The Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai doesn't require 600,000 people. It requires that it be a Rishus HaRabim. So he's saying a Chiddush, that even though for carrying a Rishus HaRabim, from Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaRabim, or from Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaYochid, the Rishus HaRabim is defined by having 600,000 people. For the malacha of carrying in Rishus HaRabim, Dalet Amos, there doesn't have to have 600,000 people to be considered Rishus HaRabim. Therefore, he explains the Gemara very nicely. He says there are very few cities that have 600,000 people. So why would Chazal say, don't blow the shofar on Shabbos, don't take the lulav on Shabbos, because you may take from Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaRabim? There's very few situations where you have Rishus HaRabim of 600,000 people. But it was saying carrying Dalet Amos Rishus HaRabim doesn't require 600,000 people. It's just a place where many people are and the other characteristics. That's very common. So when the Gemara made the Gzeira, the Gemara mentioned what's more common, Mava Dalet Amos Rishus HaRabim versus Rishus HaYochid Rishus HaRabim. But the Chiddush of Rabbi Yehuda Asad again is that to be considered a Rishus HaRabim for Dalet Amos Rishus HaRabim, nobody will require that the Rishus HaRabim have 600,000 people.